You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've been listening to Hot Texas with Hot Texas Swing Band. And
we're delighted that you're with us tonight for episode 132. We have an author returning to the show for her second appearance. Here is Jane Coletti Perry. Hello, Jane.
Hi. Good evening. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. What our audience doesn't know is we just had a little technical glitch, didn't we?
Yes,
but we're up and running. Welcome to the world of cyberspace.
Exactly.
Well, Jane, we are so delighted that you're back with us. The last time that we chatted was December 26th of 2020. And we concentrated on your book, Lila's Journey, which we're going to also talk about tonight. And then we're going to take a deep dive into another book.
Marcello's
Promise. And we're so delighted to have you back with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be back. I appreciate the invitation.
So where are you joining us from tonight?
Outside of Kansas City in Olathe, Kansas. So I'm in the middle of the middle, right here smack dab in the middle of the country.
That's good. The middle of the middle. I like that.
I haven't heard that before.
Well, I just made it up.
That's what writers do. That's what writers do. Let's see, Jim, do you have a little bio?
Want to introduce
Jane to our audience?
Okay, award-winning author Jane Coletti Perry loves nothing more than digging into history, discovering unique stories, and bringing those stories to life through writing. Her short story, Lila's Song, won the 2021 Women Writing the West Laura Award. Tonight, we'll be taking an in-depth look at two of her books, Lila's Journey, released in 2024, and her historical fiction novel, Marcello's Promise, inspired by her family's immigrant story. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Jane.
Holding them up to the camera so that everybody gets to see these wonderful, beautiful covers. Yeah. You know, Jim just mentioned that you had won the Laura Award. Is the Laura Award connected to a famous sort of named for a famous writer?
Laura Ingalls Wilder. And people who read Western stories would know that name from all the Little House on the Prairie books. And so the Women Writing the West named that award. It's the Short Story Award after her. And it's a great honor to have gotten that award. It really encouraged me enormously. I got that award several years ago and I'm still walking on air about it. But yes, that's who it's named for.
And I think you mentioned the other night when we chatted that you are reading her books now too.
Yes. Right now, I'm working on a sequel to Lila's Journey, further stories, and I have not, strange as it may seem, not read very many of the Laura Ingalls Wilder's books. I've read, portions of them, but none of them really beginning to end. So I got Little House on the Prairie and read it the other night. It's absolutely delightful. I'm sure maybe many listeners have seen the TV shows over the years, But the book is absolutely charming. Plus, it's a wonderful reference if you are writing, because it just gives so many details about the food of the time, the animals, the clothing, the environment, just ever so many things. So it's a great resource. And then I want to read the story about when they live in a sod house, the little house on Plum Creek, or the name is, you know, similar to that.
Yeah.
So that's my next one.
And how fun.
Yeah. More details about life on the prairie. Yes.
How fun.
Can you imagine living in a sod house?
I cannot imagine. Although here in Albuquerque, there is so much dust. It's not like being in a sod house exactly. But as soon as you dust, it's all back again. I mean, there's what's the point?
Well, you know, that's why I want to read this. I don't know what it's like to live in a sod house either. You can imagine up to a point, and that's why the firsthand account. Read it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I can be sitting there sleeping and all the spiders dropping from the ceiling.
I'm so glad I don't have to do that. I congratulate all those who did. All those pioneers.
So tell us a little bit about how long you've been writing, Jane, and what kind of, and then what inspired the first book we're going to talk about a little bit, Lila's Journey.
Well, I've been writing about 18 years now. I got a degree in English and taught English for a few years. And in my retirement years, I started writing small pieces for magazines. I took some continuing education classes. I joined some writing groups. And one thing led to another. And I've enjoyed it so much and had time to devote to it that I've just continued. And it's just been enormously fun. And then Lila's Journey began. I live about 2 miles from the original Santa Fe Trail. It's about 2 miles from my house. I visited a stagecoach stop, which is still an operating stagecoach stop on the Santa Fe Trail. And while I was visiting there, just all kinds of ideas came to me about stories, about what it would have been like to work at that stagecoach stop. And that's what inspired Lila's Journey, a young girl working there. From there, it just developed into a young girl escaping an abusive family, and she runs away. She lives in the next town on the Santa Fe Trail, which is Council Grove, Kansas. And that's the setting of the book.
You open the book, and it's such a beautiful cover, but you open the book, and you do it with Marcello's Promise as well, with a lovely quote. And this was Walt Whitman, "I Hear America Singing." Would you just take a moment and tell us what was it about this that inspired you and inspires Lila?
Yes. Walt Whitman was a very famous poet in America at the time of the story in the 1860s. I wanted my character Lila, who is just a fourth grade education, to be inspired by something in school. And this happened to be it. The line in the story, or in the poem that inspires her, "I Hear America Singing," is this one. "The delicious singing of the mother or the young wife at work or of the girl sewing and washing." Well, she's just a fourth grade girl who has chores to do, but somehow this really speaks to her. The whole poem is about every person in America, no matter your station in life. You are important. You have something to contribute. You have a job, and it all works together in this great country of America. And it really grabs her. And it gives her meaning, and she relies on this realization that she wants to learn more and that she is a person of importance. And she leans on this throughout the story.
Yes. And there are, this is a story that is so engaging to read. It just jumps off the page. Your characters, let's just talk about characters a little bit.
Sure.
Do you want to ask her your character question?
Is it time?
Well, you can.
It's almost too early.
No, that's okay, because she can address it in this part, and then we'll all remember what she said now.
We know that you create these characters to some degree, and you control them, and you put, kind of whip them into shape. But do they ever surprise you?
They do sometimes. Yes, that's fun. And sometimes they surprise themselves. Lila is thrown into an impossible situation, running away from home, basically. And especially a young girl, and especially in a cowboy frontier situation, she has got to be really resourceful and really strong. And I don't think she realizes that she is strong. And I was kind of surprised myself at how, you know, strong she turned out to be. She's got a really indomitable spirit. She's very, very devoted and hardworking. Yeah. And I think that would be a bit of a surprise at how resourceful she is. She finds herself in some really life-threatening situations, trying not to give too much away. But
she really is a strong character. You really created quite a woman in her. So
thank you.
I remember one challenge after another, and she seems to solve it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, she even finally gets a pair of boots. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, her last name is Bonner. We're talking about the main character, Lila Bonner. Yes. Tell us a little bit about Mrs. Bauer.
Mrs. Bauer she runs the boarding house in the town, and this is where Lila ends up living. She has to put her head somewhere. She has a little money that she brought in the bottom of her pocket, enough for her to have a few nights stay. She offers to work for Mrs. Bauer and eventually convinces her that she's not a risk, but a helpful person. Mrs. Bauer is a no-nonsense, hard-to-get-to-know kind of person. She holds everyone at arm's length and does not really make friends, does not have any friends. Yeah. And no one seems to care very much for her. And it isn't until Lila gets to know the backstory of Mrs. Bauer's life that she begins to understand that she's the way she is.
Yeah. Did you know Mrs. Bauer's backstory when you started to write her? Or as
no.
you... Yeah. So she told you. Did she tell you? Did she say, Jane, this is my story?
Right. I didn't plan for her to have a very sort of traumatic backstory. And it just kind of came.
Yeah, it just came. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to ask about one of the other ones?
Well, we have this thing on here. Tell us a little bit about the process of creating a character.
Sometimes they come while you're writing, and sometimes you plan ahead. Mm-hmm. I usually have a rough outline of who I want to be in the story, but there's usually a lot of secondary characters, and those don't happen, for me at least, until I start writing, like neighbors, and then you develop sort of subplots. Then you can get really interested in other characters, and that's really fun. Mm-hmm. Then you can kind of go from there and give them personalities and give them, you know, troublesome personalities, roadblocks. And I don't really often start out with some of those roadblocks, but you always need conflict.
You always need conflict,
you
don't
always
you?
Need conflict.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mrs. Bauer was a conflict at first. And she and Lila eventually become very sympathetic characters for each other, but they do not start out that way.
Yeah, yeah. They develop a lovely friendship. Okay, so how about John Reynolds?
Yes.
And Fanny.
John is the, I guess you would say, the love interest of Lila at the beginning. She denies it, but she's quite taken. John is the school teacher. And Lila becomes smitten with him, but tells no one. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this person, Fanny, shows up. It's a surprise to the reader, I hope.
Yes, very much so.
because it looks as though maybe there's a romance blossoming between Lila and John. And all of a sudden, Fanny shows up on the stagecoach, and Lila thinks, oh, that's John's sister. And all of a sudden, John introduces her as his fiancée, and Lila is crushed. Fanny is everything John is not. John is very heartwarming, tender, hardworking school teacher. Fanny is entitled, a bit of a snob, feels superior to everybody she meets, and looks down on just about every person she meets in this frontier town. And Lila, for the life of her, cannot figure out what these two have in common and how they would ever make a marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially in these conditions. You know, I mean, it's a civilized area, and yet it's not what Fanny is accustomed to.
Yes.
And she would have had to live a life that she really had no idea. It would be like if suddenly, Jim, you and I had to become farmer and ranch wife, and we had no idea how to do that.
That plant in the field or something?
We have no idea.
Get the horses out.
Yeah, it's like Fanny just is clueless.
Does not fit. Oh, well, gosh. You know, I intimate in the dialogue and in the story that I think she has designs to yank him back to St. Louis, where they both resided initially, and get him out of what she thinks is just a hellhole of this town, which is a fairly civilized frontier town, but she does not like it.
She's a bit of a conniver.
Yes, she is. And it's fun to write those characters.
I'm sure that it is. Okay, we have time for one more character. Look at the character list. Who do you want to ask about?
The father. Talk about a bad guy from the beginning.
A stepfather.
Oh, Lila's father?
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Well, he is a sorry character. He is a loser. Now, not from the very beginning. From the backstory, we hear that he was a good father, that he's her stepfather, and he takes care of the family and looks after them initially. But as the story folds open, Lila's mother has just passed away. Her stepfather does not take this well. He starts drinking heavily. He starts gambling. He starts going into town, losing money. And he is just falling apart in front of her. And he starts actually making advances to Lila in his drunkenness. And she knows that she has to either endure this or leave. So she chooses to leave.
She chooses a journey.
Yes, she does.
We are talking with guest tonight, Jane Coletti Perry. And Jane, you and the two of us, of course, have Blue Cottage and Clicks by Madison in common. We absolutely love these two, and they are, and we're grateful for sponsors of the show. And if you are a writer, find out what they can do for you. Here is, we're going to hear a word from Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. And when we come back, we're going to jump into Marcello's Promise. Stay right where you are, and we'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experience, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest, Jane Coletti Perry. We've just been talking about Lila's journey, and now we're going to switch to Marcello's Promise. You know, we talked about, we kind of set this up with a poem. It's kind of an inspiration here. From what, H. Jackson Brown?
Yes, from
not the musician.
H. Jackson Brown Jr. And it's a terrific. We're going to ask you, Jane, to tell us about this quote that you start this book with, which really is perfect for it.
Would you like me to read the quote that's in the
book? Sure.
Or did you want to read it?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't care. You read it.
It says, throw off the bow lines, sail away from the safe harbor, catch the trade winds in your sail, explore, dream, discover.
Uh-huh. And you can see, I'm going to hold up the cover to the camera for those that are watching. And we can see the Statue of Liberty right there in the background and a man and a woman down in the foreground. So we have some idea that this is going to have to do with a voyage or a trip of some kind that gets them transatlantic to the United States. Yes?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that that quote describes perfectly my characters, because it describes an immigrant perfectly. They are sailing away from a safe harbor, if there ever was one. They're sailing away from everything that they've ever known. They're sailing away from their families that they will never see again, most likely, from their parents, from their brothers and sisters, from their way of life. And they're going to explore, dream, and discover, and off they go. So yeah. I love that quote.
Yeah. Will you, just as you did before with Lila, just kind of give us a brief sort of backstory to the book, including maybe when and where it takes place, the majority of it takes place?
The backstory for the book comes from my family. I grew up hearing stories about my immigrant ancestors. My father and his parents immigrated from Italy around 1912. Their first home was in Cumberland, Wyoming, which is a coal mining town. The coal mining town did not seem to have a lot of law and order to it. It seemed to have no law and order to it, to be honest with you. And as a little child hearing about these stories, I would sit wide-eyed, and they would tell stories about happy times, about sad times, about drunken brawls in the saloons on Saturday nights. But all in all, it came down to, as people in the family would eventually get old and pass away, I didn't want the stories to end, and I wanted to write them down for posterity. So that was my impetus for writing the story. Marcello's Promise. It's fictitious, but it comes from my family. Now, the actual story, Marcello's Promise, begins in Italy in 1915. It begins in a little town of Monastero, and Marcello's son is just being born, and he leaves for America when his son is just a few months old. He leaves his brand new bride and little baby son off to America, and that's where the story begins. He has promised his wife, and that's where the title comes from. The promise is to Louisa, his wife, for the American dream, a life of opportunity. That's the promise, and that's what he wants to give his wife more than life itself, is a new and better life on the other side of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. And she goes along with him, doesn't she? She doesn't. You know, she's knowing he's had that dream from before they marry.
Yes.
And she doesn't, she's not Fanny. She's not trying to say, no, we can't, we have to stay here. You know, mama and papa are here. And, you know.
Yes.
She buys into it, doesn't she?
Yes. She's all in. And she has to say goodbye to her family and be just as much in on the dream as he is, no matter how long it takes to believe it. And I have to admire the believing in the dream and the commitment to it. Yeah. So that's how the story starts. He goes, and it takes him 3 years of working in the coal mine to have enough money to finally send for her and his now 3-year-old son, who doesn't remember him.
Yeah. And the day that money arrives, he sends it as a banknote, and that you're how you write about her receiving that money, because it will pay for her trip.
Yes.
And we know it's going to be a kind of a gnarly transatlantic crossing, because you take us through that when he goes But it's not like months. I mean, she's gonna get there sooner than later.
Yes.
You know, and so she can just imagine what it's going to be like to be back with him again in like a month's time, you know, or 6 weeks time. It's very, very, very exciting. One of the things that we discovered with this book, Jane, are a number of themes, and one of them has to do with hardships. Yes. And one of the hardships, there are many, is climate and the weather in Wyoming. Yes. And I think you selected a passage. We'll let you kind of set it up, and then please, we're delighted to have you share it with us.
Yes, you're right. That was one of the biggest challenges that Martello faced, that they all faced, was the Wyoming winters. They're brutal. Wyoming, southeastern, where the coal mines were, it's on a plateau. And when the snow comes, it could be fierce. So I was going to read a passage. This is in the winter, it's starting to snow. And she, Louisa, has decided she needs to get some more coal. They have a furnace, a little stove in the house that needs coal. She put her coat on and her gloves. She pulled on her woolen hat, and she picked up the bucket. "I'll be back in a minute, Tony," she called over her shoulder and stepped outside. She sucked in her breath against the fierce wind and stood dazed, enveloped in white. Her head bent, she hugged the front of the house with short steps and turned the corner. A furious blast of wind smothered her into another standstill. She inched her way to the back of the house until her foot slid across an exposed icy patch, and she grabbed the siding to keep from falling. Through the spinning snow, she could make out the shape of the outhouse and the large compartment attached to it that stored the coal. How many times had she crossed the yard, never giving it a second thought? Now it looked so far away, too far away. As she moved away from the house, the storm's fury jerked the bucket from her hand and knocked her to her knees. She felt for the bucket and curled her fingers around the handle. The wind roared in her ears, daring her to get up. Louisa stood and regained her balance. Her head down, her eyes tearing, she leaned into the wind with one arm outstretched, searching for the outhouse. Icy needles stung her face. Her breath came in freezing gulps, burning her lungs. Where? Where was the outhouse? She stopped and raised her head. A dark shape loomed. She trudged forward, buffeted by the wind, until her hand collided against the side of the outhouse. Exhausted, she dropped her bucket and fumbled for the handle on top of the coal bin. Grabbing with both hands, she hoisted the lid up. She forced her fingers to wrap around the chunks of coal and dropped them into the bucket until it was full. Lugging the bucket, she felt her way around the corner of the outhouse to the door and pushed herself inside. She forced the door shut and sagged against it. Louisa stomped her feet and rubbed her arms and beat her hands together, trying to bring life back to her frozen limbs. "I made it out here. I can make it back." She waited several minutes before she gathered her courage and stepped out into the whiteness. The outline of the house guided Louisa through the blinding snow as she fought across the backyard. The bucket banged against her leg. It started to slip from her hand. She plunged forward in clumsy steps, the snow past her knees, around the corner of the house to the front porch. Through the front door, she stumbled into the house and forced the door shut. With a relief she had never known, she leaned against the door and closed her eyes. Thank God.
It's a good story, you know.
Oh, blizzards. Oh,
she
blizzards.
Almost didn't make it. Yeah. Folks that, you know, don't live in really bad winter areas don't quite understand that. You know, Marcello's, one of his brothers told, I think it was one of his brothers told the story, very, very, very same thing. But the fellow was an older gentleman. He never made it back.
They found him in the spring.
They found him in the snow in the spring. Yeah. I mean, the poor fellow was under the snow all for months.
Yeah. Well, thank you for reading that passage. Yeah. We knew that many of our listeners may have encountered blizzards like that, or have stories in their family being on farms and places in the West that is exactly what a blizzard can do.
Yes. And fortunately, I haven't experienced that, but I know a lot of people have, you know, just going from the front porch to the back of the house, or the back of the house to the barn. It doesn't have to be far, and you could be lost.
Now, there are so many stories, and I am beginning to look just a bit at time. We're fine on time, but I'm just paying attention.
Yeah.
You also tell a story about a little girl that is found in this neighborhood where Luisa and Marcella live. And they hear something, and it turns out they find this little girl that has been, she's been tied to the porch.
Tied to the porch,
Tied to the porch.
Yeah.
That's quite a story. Will you share that story and then where you heard that story from?
Yes. Marcello and his brother are on the way to work one morning, and they hear a sound, and they don't know what it is at first. They keep on going toward the mine, and they stop again. And it is a little child, and they find a little girl who is tied to one of the front porches of one of the houses of the miners. And they, of course, untie her and gather her up and try to locate her parents. And it's an important aspect of the story. And I can tell you how I got the idea for this. I was talking with Bobby and Jim last night about this. And I got this idea at the dentist office, of all places. You find ideas in the strangest places. I went in to have my teeth cleaned. I met a new lady at the dentist's office, and she said, "Well, you're retired. What do you do?" And instead of saying, "Oh, I'm gardening and I belong to a singing group and yada yada," I said, "I'm writing a historical fiction about my family's immigrant story, and my grandpa was a coal miner in Wyoming in 1912. And then she said, "Well, let me tell you about my family immigrant story." And I said, "Oh my." And then she proceeded to clean my teeth, and I couldn't respond. But she had a wonderful story to tell me while I sat back in the chair about her great uncle. He was not Italian. He was from Croatia, I believe. But anyway, the Baltic country somewhere in southeastern Kansas. There's a huge community of miners, all immigrants, that he had had his own small mining company that had mined out its mines and had closed down his company. This was in the 1920s. And he was going around checking the houses to make sure everyone had cleared out. And as he was going around from small house to small house, he came up upon a little boy who was about two, who was tied to the front porch of a house. You know, they're almost like shacks, but it was a little home where a family had lived. True story. This turned out to be her great uncle picked this little boy up. They tried to find the family. The family was long gone. He had not been abused in any way. He looked to be in good health. They ended up adopting and raising this little two-year-old boy. He grew up, had a wonderful life, lived in Chicago, and this was her uncle.
Yeah.
A true story. And I said, "Do you mind if I put that in my book?" And she said, "No, I don't mind." And I said, "Thank you for a wonderful story."
Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing. I still get a little choked up when I think about that being a true story.
Yeah, absolutely.
It didn't happen to my family, but it happened to someone else's family. Very touching.
We're gonna step away again, Jane, for just a moment, tell you about one of the places that you can order books from many of our author guests, including Jane's books, the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, we're going to chat a little bit more about some of the characters in Marcello's Promise. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer, Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. We're talking to Jane Perry about her book, Marcello's Promise.
Oh, it's so good.
Speaking of Marcello, what kind of guy is he anyway? Yeah.
Well, he's quite a guy, I think. He's very, very devoted to his family. He's very hardworking. He puts his family first. I do have to say, you've asked me before if any of my characters surprise me. Marcello does a little bit toward the latter half of the book. He becomes almost unreasonable in some respects about how determined he is to provide for his family. And I say that because one of his brothers, Lucas, becomes involved in the bootlegging business. He's looking for a way to provide for his family, and all the other brothers become somewhat entangled in this. Marcello, one of the brothers unfortunately dies, and this almost pushes Marcello not over the edge, but he becomes so determined to be a good provider that he takes some chances that he wouldn't ordinarily do. And Louisa, his wife, thinks that he is taking some unreasonable chances. He doesn't ordinarily do that. He's usually very cautious, I would say, and does everything within the lines. But later on in the book, Marcello steps outside the lines a little bit. And that we don't see that ordinarily from him. So he becomes, you know, the provider, and Louisa becomes a little bit of the protector of her family. So they become a little bit at odds with each other, which sets up a bit of a conflict in the latter part of the book.
Yes. Well, when we meet Lucas, he's seen Marcello for the first time. They haven't seen each other for several years.
Yeah.
And we see right away, we understand that Lucas has left mining. He is managing a saloon. He is dressed well. He has a different kind of, you know, lifestyle, but he's still very family oriented. He's still very much the part of the family.
Yes.
And I thought it was so interesting. He offers Marcello almost right away, come work for me. This is before the bootlegging. This is, we don't have prohibition yet.
Right.
And I was kind of surprised that Marcello didn't sort of look around that saloon versus coal mining, you know, didn't say to himself, hey, I could go in looking really stylish every day. And what a nice place to work, you know?
Yes. That, I think the only reason he didn't, I know, looking back, you know, Marcello, what were you thinking? But that he really fancied that he wanted to become an A1 coal miner, become a supervisor, and that would earn him more money. And that he was so determined, he didn't really think about anything else, that it never occurred to him to Lucas, even though he admired his brother very, very much. Yeah. The oldest brother, all the other brothers, well, the oldest one in the family, you know, they all looked up to him.
Yeah.
But you're right about that.
You use a term, chain of migration.
Yes.
Just one time in the book, it was a term unknown to me, and this book so perfectly explains what that is. Would you just take a moment? We're talking characters, but so many of these characters are connected to this family. What does that mean?
Right.
Chain of migration.
And I grew up hearing that term, chain migration, because that's how my family emigrated. The first, oldest, whoever wants to go first, they saved enough money to get there and to get established and get a job. And what Scrimp would save, he would earn enough to get established, but also set a little bit aside each month so that there would be enough of a nest egg to send back home for the next one that wanted to come. And usually there was always a next one that wanted to come. The next one would in line, and usually it went by age, would step up and say goodbye and go. And the process repeated itself as many times as the family wanted to send members to the new country.
Yeah, so interesting. And, you know, Jim and I have retailing in our blood. So Cheap John was a very interesting character to us because we're a little familiar with traveling salesmen. We met working for the JCPenney company. So kudos.
Did you really?
That you included pennies in this book. But tell us just a little bit about this character, Cheap John. Yeah, Cheap John.
Yes. Well, Cheap John was real. And my dad remembered Cheap John and wrote about him. My dad wrote a little history of his life and saved it and gave my sister and me a copy, which I used a whole lot when I was writing this. Cheap John had a store in town. He would every so often gather up merchandise, clothing, store implements, things for the home, tools, what have you, and put them in a wagon and bring them out to the mining towns and then set up a day of shopping for all these wives in the mining town. And they would come and they would barter. It was expected to barter. Well, the kids remembered it so much because Cheap John had a short fuse. And if the wives bartered too much, you know, they go back and forth and back and forth. If they bartered and pushed him too far, he would get really mad. And my dad remembered him turning bright red. And then he would just say, enough. He would shout, enough. And he would slam all of his cases closed and say, shopping's over. And he would put them all back in his wagon and just leave and go to the next town. But I think all the kids thought it was great entertainment to watch this whole thing unfold. And he was called Cheap John, though, because he had to compete with the company store and whatever prices they were charging. And so apparently, you know, he did have decent prices. That's why he was called Cheap John, but not to his face.
Never to his face. Well, and then there's a mention of the Montgomery Ward catalog.
Yes.
And Brother Roberto, it's a very funny little moment. What happens with Roberto and the Montgomery Ward catalog?
What a joke. I know. And again, this happened in real life to some new immigrant, some Italian who hadn't been off the boat very long, as they would say, but it happened to Roberto in the story, to Luisa's brother. They show them a catalog with all these pretty women wearing dresses that are for sale, but they can't read any English whatsoever. They just see these pretty women in this catalog and they tell them it's for mail order brides and you can pick out who you want to marry. And there's the cost of the bride right there. And they tell them what it's cost. And they went so far as to go and get a ticket at the post office or wherever you would go, you know, to go and purchase whatever it would cost and send it off in the mail, you know, to Montgomery Ward is where it was going. And then back in the mail, you know, 3 weeks or 4 weeks later comes this package for Luigi, or in this case, Roberto, and it's a dress.
It's a dress.
And everybody, of course, that watched him purchase it just laughs and laughs and laughs. And this poor person thought he'd gotten a real pretty brunette from back east to come and marry him and set up family and start, you know, the wonderful American dream.
Such a funny episode. Yes. We're going to stop, step away again for one last little spot. This one is about our business that helps to support the show, outwestshop.com. And when we come back, we're going to find out what Jane is working on next. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out outwestshop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. We're talking Jane Colletti Perry. What's next?
A follow-up to Lila's Journey. Lila's Journey, the sequel. I'm working on it now. What's next for Lila? Well, she and John are going to get a tract of land and be homesteaders. That I can tell you. Yes.
Okay. How cool. Jane, so fun to have you with us again. Where can people find you, follow you, and buy your books?
You can find my books on Amazon or Kindle Unlimited. The Facebook page is facebook.com, Jane Coletti Perry. My website is janecolettiperry.com, so you can find me both those places. I'd be thrilled if you would. You can also, after you read the books, I would love it if you would take a minute and write a review on either Amazon or Goodreads. Authors love to have people write reviews. Word by mouth is the best advertising, so that would be very
And in fact, since you're mentioning that, why not leave a comment on this broadcast and tell us that you enjoyed this show? We would love to hear that.
That is an even better idea. Way to go. Thank you. Jim has
a quote.
You know, it's almost a little passage here. You know, Marcello is getting the house ready for his wife's arrival. And he's building this fantastic table, dining room, living room table. And he's having a real problem with one leg. So getting it to fit right. So he's invited his brother over to help him finish it. And they're talking. And he says, if you don't look too close, it fits fine. Marcello said, viewing the table from every angle. Hey, finito, he proclaimed and waved his hammer in triumph. He turned to Mick, his brother. What's that American saying about the tunnel and the light? I see the light at the end of the tunnel. Yes, yes, that's it. I sent Lisa money for her passage, and now he swept his arms at the table with a flourish. I finished the first piece of furniture for our home. I see the light in the tunnel. The light at the end of the tunnel, Mick corrected. That's what I said, Marcello grinned ear to ear. The arrival of his family was at hand. He could taste it.
We've been talking with Jane Coletti Perry. This is episode 132. Next week, we start off the month of May. We are delighted to have Ann Hillerman return for episode 133. Her brand new book, Shadow of the Solstice, has just come out April 22nd. And she will be joined by our good friend, Henry C. Park. He is the film editor for True West Magazine and an author in his own right. And I know they are both excited about chatting with each other a little bit, at least, about Dark Winds, this series. So do join us next week. And I think that's all we have.
I think that's it.
Yeah. Jane, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Do you have anything else you want to say?
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Thanks, keep Jane. Writing and we'll keep reading. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.